Take me where the promises are real.
Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Cecilia, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our own personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, we'll hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Let's welcome our speaker, Barbara from Fifth.
Hey, I'm Barb B, or Barbie, and I'm an alcoholic, and it's good to be here, and thank you, Lisa, for asking me to speak and tell my story tonight, you know, and I did pray with my friend Diana beforehand because I never know really what's going to come out of my mouth. I don't really know. I mean, I know I'm here to either tell you what it was like, what happened, what I'm like now, my relationship, how I developed a relationship with a higher power. So I'm just going to do the best I can to try to get that across. I'm a little scattered. It's been a rough weekend. I had what I call my sober dog, Casey. I got him when I was less than a year sober, and I had to put him down on Friday. So it was, you know, like a lot of lack of sleep and emotion attached to that. But, you know, God worked in mysterious ways. So I'm telling my story tonight and again on Friday night. You know, service work helps me get out of self and out of my head. And, you know, I was just very grateful that he was, you know, he was just a great companion, and some of the people in this room knew him, and it's awesome. And so it's different. If I was drinking, I would have a totally different reaction to putting my dog down, I'm sure. I would probably be drunk right now. Well, I know I'd be drunk right now, probably passed out, blacked out, feeling full of self-pity. And instead, I'm really feeling grateful that I had him in my life for 13 years, and he was just a great companion. So, you know, sobriety does change things. You know, my sobriety date is July 15th of 2010. I have a sponsor who I met on my very first day. The very first day I picked up a light ship. I have a home group, which is the same home group on that very first day, when I picked up my first white ship, and my only white ship, actually. And I sponsor women, and I have developed a relationship with a higher power that I sometimes choose to call God, and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I say spirit of the universe or goddess or whatever. I change it around to kind of whatever I'm feeling at that time. But I definitely have a relationship with something bigger than me that I did not have when I came in. Thought I did, and then I was all kind of cocky. I kind of remember that first meeting, and oh God, yeah, like I've got a relationship with God. I had no relationship with God. Like I thought it was all spiritual. I used to go to these like Buddhist temples, and I'd be like so drunk. And I thought that was, you know, spiritual, you know, and they would all, I wondered why they were shunning me, you know. It probably just reeked of alcohol. You know, I think I was born, I hear this sometimes in the room, needing a drink, man. I was just one of those. I was so fearful of just life when I was, from the first moments that I can remember, you know, I just didn't fit in. You know, it didn't really, I had a decent family. There wasn't anything wrong with my family. I started drinking when I was 13. And I just knew at that time from those first drinks that I was going to make a career out of drinking. Like they talk about drinking career, I can totally relate to that because that is just, I knew that's what I was going to do. You know, I just, once I discovered alcohol, I was not going to not have it in my life. I was a child of the, so I came in at 13 and I got sober at 56. So, like, I drank a lot of years, you know, and alcohol is my baby. But when you're raised in the 70s, 60s and 70s, there's a lot of drugs. They just never got a hold of me, thank God. Well, maybe not. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Maybe I would have come in sooner if they would have. But so I did a lot of drugs, but alcohol was the thing that stayed with me through the whole experience, my whole drinking experience, you know. So it was easier, actually, to get drugs when I was 13 than alcohol, you know. And so I did whatever I could. I tried them all. And like I said, nothing ever really took hold. There was always alcohol. You know, 13, I mean, I don't know. I was so afraid of people, like, and life that, those first drink, I don't even remember what I drank. I don't remember, like, my first drink. I remember kind of the era of first drink, and it was beer, and it was either Schlitz, Falstaff, or there was another one. Pabst. No, it wasn't even that, but they were horrible beers. You know, like, I don't think anybody would drink. Maybe people still drink them. I don't even know if they're still around. It didn't really matter. You know, it was just like whatever. And I loved getting, and I was one of those that, like, I threw up a lot. You know, I didn't handle liquor well and alcohol well at all, beer included. You know, I just spilled a lot of body fluids, like, throughout my whole drinking career, whatever, you know, just use your imagination there, you know. And I remember there's a part in the book, and it talks about Jekyll and Hyde, and it talks about, like, insanely drunk and personality change. And I remember when I first came in, I'm like, I don't think I was really like that, you know, like, because they're kind of describing a sociopath, you know, or somebody that personality changes. And I had my best friend Janet, and she and I knew each other from third grade, and we drank very similarly. And she had, her mom was an alcoholic, and her personality would flat out change, and she'd get in all these fights with her boyfriends. And, you know, I watched this for years, and I'm like, she's an alcoholic, you know, like. And then one day Janet decided that, and they talk about her in the book, she just decided that alcohol was interfering with her relationships and that she just was going to moderate. She didn't even have to quit, and she moderated. And that was probably 20 years ago, and she can still do that. And I remember when she was going through that, I'm watching her going, how does she do that? Like, how can she sit there and have one glass of wine? We used to drink the same. I don't understand. Now, I don't know I'm an alcoholic. I don't know what alcoholism is. You know, I was a heavy drinker for a lot of years, you know, and I was the party girl, and that's what I did from the age of 13 and on. But she could do that, and I was baffled, absolutely baffled. And I remember, like, throughout my drinking career, I would ask myself and be with friends and say, do you think we're alcoholics? I'm like, no, I got my job. You know, I'm working. Like, I had, like, that was my barometer. You know, it didn't matter if I drank every day. It didn't matter if I had hellacious hangovers every day. I showed up to work. I can't be an alcoholic. And I lived with that until I was 56, and I wanted to kill myself. You know, like, I still worked. Like, I never lost a job. So I don't, you know, one of the things I was thinking about before I came, one of the many things I love about Alcoholics Anonymous in the steps is it never tells us, like, how much we have to drink or what we have to look like or how long we have to drink or, you know, like, how many DUIs you have to have. It doesn't do any of that. Like, it etched in my soul is, like, I know I'm powerless over alcohol, but it took me a long time to figure that out. Because I went with such a different, you know, under the bridge, you know, lost everything kind of definition of what it takes to be an alcoholic. And, you know, I drank. So what's that, middle, junior high, I guess it was then, when I started drinking and into high school. And, you know, I functioned until I walked into AA, you know, but the progression was, it was interesting. It was just this long, slow descent into soul death, you know, is kind of what it was. It was like, at the end, I was so flatlined in my soul, yet I was still working. You know, it's like, I still am amazed that I could power through some of the hangovers. So I get through high school, and I was in an all-girls Catholic high school, which was a trip, you know, and the nuns, and And we used to sneak out and do drugs, and I remember dropping mescaline in class. I mean, we were just a wild little group. I got alcohol as much as I could, and I used to just sneak out, and I was just like kind of a bad little kid, you know. I was the youngest of my family. There was three older siblings, and my parents were kind of checked out by that time. They had me older in life, and they were just looking at retirement, you know, so it's just like, let's just get, like, move her, like, just get her out of here, you know. So as soon as I went to college, they were like, bam, retired to Florida. They couldn't wait to get away. So they gave me a lot of leeway. They didn't pay that much attention to me, you know, and I was, like, kind of the black sheep of the family, but not bad enough that they did anything about it. So my first year, I go to college, and oh man, it was a disaster. The drugs, I never went to class, and people were overdosing all around me, and I was doing Quaaludes and drinking, and just, it was bad. That was not a good year. I don't even know if I had a 0.1 average. Like, I don't even know how I got. Anyway, I came home and I slept for the whole summer. It was like a disaster. You know, I thought it was going to be the beginning of such a beautiful life, and it's college, and it's like, oh my God, these are the glory days. And it was like, oh Lord, it was horrible. So then I went to a community college. It took me 7 years to get a 4-year degree. I have a son who's beat me. It's taken him 13, but you know, and he could be one of us, but I've learned I cannot pronounce anybody an alcoholic, as I found out with my friend Janet. So then I went, you know, kind of, my alcoholism, kind of, I'd get these periods where I could kind of hold it together a little bit, and so I would, like, I was working full-time after that and going to a community college, and I was still going to the bars every night, but I kept it together, and then I finally ended up in a 4-year institution, and I got a degree in horticulture. That was my very first degree. And I moved, when was that? In 78. I then moved here to Atlanta. So that was all in Michigan, and, you know, I was keeping it together pretty much, drinking, like, every day. Like, that was just going to be part of it. I didn't even start blacking out until the last 2 years of my drinking. I mean, like, it's just amazing. Like, I hear of some people who, day one, drink one, they black out. And so, like, fast forward 43 years, 41 years into my drinking, and I start blacking out. It's just crazy. I don't even know why that, it progressed. I'll get to that. So I came to Atlanta. Whoo, man, Atlanta in 78, 79 was a part, well, it might still be a party town. I don't know. I don't live that life anymore, but it was really a party town back then. The Little Five Points Pub and the Moonshadow Saloon and the Downtown Cafe and the back street. I mean, there was just, like, some really cool places to hang out. And so I was, like, definitely a bar fly. And I did that for about the first 4 years I was here. And I worked a horticulture job. I mean, it did not take much, like, to plant seedlings, you know. I mean, I could nod out at the, like, it didn't require a lot of me, actually. And so it was probably the perfect job. I mean, I could go have lunch, you know, have a Bloody Mary with lunch, and nobody knew any better. You know, that did not bode well later when I became a nurse. It doesn't work the same. You know, you got to have your wits about you a little bit more. But anyway, so it was around 83, and Yeah, it was in 1983, and this is the first time that maybe my drinking got some attention from me, because, you know, I can manage, so why pay attention if it's working for you? So in 83, my sister was dying of cancer, and she was worried about me because of my lifestyle. Like, I was just a barfly, and what had happened in 83 was there was a sexual assault that I was so drunk that I couldn't really, like, fend off the person. And in a way, it was good that I was so drunk, because 2 weeks later, somebody did try to fend this man off, and he stabbed her to death. And so he was, this man who was in my home that was a friend of my roommate's, had the capacity to kill. I could have been that person. Kind of got my attention, but in a twisted way, because I'm like, God, I'm so glad I was drunk, because I didn't fight him off, you know. So in a way, it worked out kind of in my favor, I guess, you know. What, I got pregnant, and it wasn't a good thing, and my sister was extremely worried about me. And at the same time, there was a man that was kind of pursuing me who didn't drink, and I knew even way back then that I should not be with somebody who drank. Like, so he seemed kind of attractive because he didn't drink and he had a house and a business and he was my safety net. And I married that safety net. And it wasn't the healthiest of relationships. I did have two sons. I have a whole different perspective of the relationship now. Like when I first got sober and through the whole marriage, he was always the problem. Like he was the problem. He's why I drank. He's an asshole. You know, I mean, and I have some clarity about that today and have had to make amends to him. I made one amends to him and a year later realized it was a half-assed amends and I had to go and make a real amends because he really did do the best that he could, you know. We're kind of okay today. Like, I can't say we're friends, but we're friendly enough, you know, because of the kids. So I had two boys in that relationship who are now in their 30s, and I have a decent relationship with them today. One of them I never really lost. The other one had drifted away for a while. When I was going through a divorce, I'm jumping ahead of myself. So I thought the marriage was the problem. So 20 years after I decided I would probably commit homicide if I stayed married to him. And so I thought it best that I divorce instead of, you know, I was literally looking in, like, Soldier of Fortune magazine looking for hit men. Like, I thought that was the way, like, that's alcoholic thinking, like, divorce or murder. And it was like, you know, murder seems like the better thing to do at the time, but I didn't even follow through all the way with the commitment. The thought maybe, but not the commitment. So I get divorced and I think, and so this was about 2008. Now I get sober 2 years later. I thought he was the problem. So when he goes away, everything should be good. Those last 2 years is what took me down. Like, I drank for 41 years before that, and I was kind of functioning, but I was, like, hangovers every day. Jump back just a little bit. So in 90, I went to nursing school. I'd had my kids. I had one of them the very last day of classes. And so I didn't drink. The two times I didn't drink in my life were the 9 months or so of my pregnancy. And for some reason, I didn't drink. I don't know if it just didn't taste. I don't know what it was. But I actually went those 2 9-month periods almost to the end without drinking. And I remember so I go to nursing school and I get my degree. And I remember sitting at the nurse's station one day going, when did these hangovers start again? Like, because my husband didn't drink, and I would always have wine, and I didn't have a shut-off valve with wine. But so I drank alone for my whole life, you know, my whole married life. And I know, like, one of the check boxes is, like, do you drink alone? And I'm like, well, I have to. He doesn't drink, you know. That was never a thing. And I would always start out thinking I'm going to have one or two glasses. And I did this forever. I'm going to have two drinks tonight, and I believed it. And then the bottle of wine would get, like, below the halfway mark, you know, and, like, when it gets below the halfway mark, you can't keep it. Like, you have to drink it because then there's not enough for the next day. So, of course, I had to drink the whole bottle. And then if you open another one, and so I would always drink a full bottle by myself every night, just, like, making dinner and that kind of thing. And then on weekends is when I would really party with some friends. And I had different groups of friends that I would party with. I'd have my Tuesday night friends, I had my Wednesday, I'd have my Friday, my Saturday night friends. And I always thought they all drank like that, like me, every day, because that's what I did. And I remember a friend of mine one time says, I only drink like this with you. And I'm like, no, you're lying. You drink like this every day. She was like my Saturday night friend. And she really didn't drink like I did. You know, it's funny, after I got sober and I saw some of these people drink, I'm like, damn, they didn't drink like me at all. You know, when I left the book club, they said, once you left, we drank so much less, you know. So during the book club, I thought that was wine was the thing that I didn't have a shut-off valve, you know. So then it talks about in the book switching liquor, you know. So then I went to vodka. Well, I found out I don't have a shut-off valve with vodka either. And then I went to gin, and I landed on gin. And I thought it was so classy because it was Bombay Sapphire and the blue thing, and it was beautiful. And you know, towards the end, it was just like, and it's so funny that we do this, but like going to different liquor stores because like I don't want them to know how much I'm really drinking. And because I went, I'm a nurse about this time, right? And I go to the liquor store, and I, at this point, I had been a hospital nurse, and I tell you, I just hope I didn't, some of my actions didn't contribute to somebody's death, because I worked in the ER on weekends, and I worked in a school during the week, and I would say, and this is what I did for years, Friday night, I'm going to have two drinks with my friends because I have to work, and I have to be there at 7 o'clock in the morning. And so at 2 in the morning, when I'd still be sitting there, you know, I'd be like, oh, and I would get up and go to work at 7 in the morning. And I imagine I reeked of alcohol, and they would kind of laugh and say, oh, Barbara's got a hangover here, some Coca-Cola, you know. And it just kind of haunts me a little bit that, like, I didn't show up fully equipped to be 100% effective as a nurse. And I don't think I actually did, like, really harm somebody, but I wasn't at my best. And I had a friend who was a nurse, and she would come to the porch that we would drink at on Friday nights, and she says, I'm working tomorrow morning at 7. I'm only going to have a glass of wine. And she would have that glass of wine, and she could do that. And it was always baffling to me how people could do that, you know, and I just couldn't. So working as the nurse, and I got divorced, I thought everything was his fault. And so the last 2 years of my drinking were absolutely like all I knew how to do was drink, you know. So I was going to the bars. I could drink how I wanted to at home. There was nobody there. I remember every night just getting so destroyed. I would literally be bouncing off my walls thinking, like, this is the way you're going to die, you know, like you're just going to be this lonely old woman drunk. I was at that point where, like, I can't imagine life without alcohol. Like, I can't. I've never thought about not drinking. Like, I was not one of those that said, let ever put together, it's the first drink. You know, I always thought it was that third or fourth or sixth or eighth or, you know, and I'd go to the doctor and they go, I'm a little concerned about your labs. And she goes, I want you to have 5 drinks a week. And I'd look at her and go, I have to, you know, you always tell the doctor you have 2 a night, right? And I'm thinking, God, I have 5 before 7 o'clock every night. You know, I was a 5 o'clock drinker. That was the other reason I thought I wasn't an alcoholic is like I would hold on until 5 o'clock, but I knew at 5 o'clock I was going to have that drink. And if I didn't have that drink, I was a raving maniac. And I remember going to dinner sometimes and with my husband, and there wouldn't be alcohol in the restaurant, and I would flip and just say, I mean, literally be screaming, you know I have alcohol with my meals. How we can't stay? And we would leave the restaurant and go find one that had drinks. Like, I couldn't not drink at 5 o'clock. It was just impossible. I would take, you know, if I had to go to things with my kids, I would always have my to-go cup in, you know, the gin and tonic would be in a water bottle or in a something, you know, so I could disguise it. I would pre-drink. I did all that stuff, you know, so the last 2 years got my attention. I couldn't figure out why I was blacking out. I quit just talking about what I did the night before. I'm driving in blackouts. You know, when I talked about that sociopathic Jekyll and Hyde thing, I thought, oh, that wasn't me. And then I remember when my kids were little, I would be drunk and I'd be driving. They would be in the car with me and I'd be driving them drunk. I'm like, that is like antisocial, like not normal behavior. I don't do that kind of stuff when I'm sober. My personality does change. My clothes don't fall off when I'm sober, you know, like they do when I'm drunk though, you know, and it's like thing, like I do things that I won't do otherwise. And it took me a while to figure out that's, you know, it was alcohol, but I didn't want to live, like I couldn't imagine a life without alcohol. So I never thought about not drinking. It was never on the table. I just would rather die. And it talks about that too, in spiritual basis or an alcoholic death. I didn't know about AA, but I was going to do the alcoholic death because I couldn't imagine life without alcohol. So it got to the point. So in July of 2010, I remember I was like suicidal. I was so depressed, and I thought just wanted to die. I just didn't know what was wrong with me. I don't know this is alcoholism. I don't know what it is. And I got this like, you know, now I know it was God, my higher power. The thought came into my head, if you don't do something about your drinking, you're going to kill yourself, for somebody else. I'm driving in blackouts. I'm thinking suicide. That got my attention. And within a short period of time, like a couple days after that thought, I got the courage to call the central office. And you know how some of us, I think I have a problem with alcohol. And they're like so sweet on the other end. Well, dear, there's a meeting in your neighborhood like tonight. And I'm like, oh, wait, what? Like, no, it's not that bad, really. You know, like, I think I was just making too big of a deal. I was already drunk at that time, and that was my last drunk. So for some reason, that Thursday, I woke up, and I was so tired. I was so done. I was just like, I can't do this another day. And I had bottles and pot, and like I did smoke a little bit every day just because it kind of got me to where I wanted to be a little quicker. Threw that away. For some reason, I just wanted total sobriety. Like I knew I just wanted total sobriety. I was smoking cigarettes at that point. I quit for 25 years. That last 2 years, I'm a chain smoker, man. I am camels. Like I'm just like constantly smoking. And it was like, so the cigarettes and the alcohol and, oh my God, I was so tired. And I actually went to my first meeting, and that was a Thursday, and it was July 15th of 2010. And I walked in, and the person, well, I was in the parking lot of the old church, and this goofy man, John S., who many of you know, comes up and says, "Hey, I'm John. You know, who are you? What meetings do you go to?" And I'm looking at him. He's like, "Is this your first meeting, like, ever?" Because I, deer in the headlights, you know, because I didn't even bring my cigarettes. Like, I didn't know, like, what AA was at all. I just knew that it was a cult, and I was desperate. And so I was going to join the cult because, like, I, just for a while, you know, just to quit drinking. And here comes John, and he introduced me to a group of women. And I will tell you, they saved my life. There was something so special about them just surrounding me. And I really don't know what I'm doing, but I felt protected, and I felt their love, and I felt, it sounds Hollywood and corny, and that's exactly what it was. It was just like this beautiful experience. And went to the meeting, and like, you know, I don't know anything about A, and they're like, pick up a white chip. And I'm like, what is that? And they go, well, just go do it. And I, at that point, I was really surrendered. I was so done. And my sponsor, I didn't know she was going to be my sponsor at the time, but she said, "I'll be your sponsor." And I'm like, I don't even know what that is, but you know, and I didn't say yes. It took me about 2 weeks to get the courage to ask her to be, you know, because I went to enough meetings. And they said, go to meetings every day. And you know, they told me what to do. And actually I came to I don't know if I should share that or not. I came to a meeting my second night, and I had it was a totally different response. Like, actually, I was in this room, and I was one of the only women, and it was a Friday, and it was many years ago now, and meetings are different, but not one person, I didn't feel welcome. In fact, I asked him, I said, "Am I allowed to be here?" Like if that would have been my first meeting, like, I don't know what would have happened. So it's so important, I think, that we always make sure we're holding our hands out and welcome, because people die from this disease. And I don't know if that would have been my first meeting, if I would have found AA attractive enough to come back. But fortunately, I kept going, and I got my sponsor, and we just started right into the steps. It transformed my life. I mean, it's just like, you know, from the outside looking in, you know, I was like, I looked kind of okay, you know, but inside, absolutely transformed. Like, from this fearful person, I was so afraid of everything. When we got to the four-step inventory, like my fear inventory was huge. I was petrified of everything and life and people and the people in the trees that were always looking at me and out to get me. I mean, I was paranoid. I was like, life was out to get me. They're not there anymore. Those demons have been lifted, you know, and it was through doing this work, you know, and I came in so desperate and drowning, like it talks about in the book, and just, I cried every day for months, you know. It was just like so raw, and like you took my best friend and my enemy away at the same time. Like, how do I like, how do I feel these feelings? I didn't know what to do with that. I've been drinking since I was a kid. I got honest for the first time. I developed a relationship. I've learned to develop relationships with other human beings, which I didn't do before. I could absolutely numb myself with alcohol and keep you separate. I could be kind of a party person, but still feel totally alone in the room. And so my sponsor really helped me be honest. Like, she was just this, you know, we just went through the steps and it was transformative. And she reminds me today, this is your best, you know, because sometimes I'll still go into a little whiny self-pity. And she goes, you know, you're living your, like, best life. And she's right. I mean, you know, I just had a big birthday. And I threw myself a big birthday party for this big birthday. And I realized, like, before I thought that would be the end of my life. You know, like, oh, my God, you're going to be, like, 70 is ancient. And it was the best time and full of love and people. And some of the people in the room here were there. And it was just a beautiful experience. And I wouldn't compare that, you know, I compare that to, like, before I got sober and I have these pity parties and go, if I died, I wouldn't have anybody at my funeral, you know, and it was like, and maybe that would have been true, I don't know, I didn't have a lot of people then, you know, and my life has expanded so much and I've learned how to relate to humans and love and be vulnerable. And so much of that is, you know, we talk about how we found our, how we developed a relationship with God. And when I first came in, I was kind of like, my sponsor said, okay, I want you to read 86 to 88 every day. And I'm like, look at that. She's putting me to step 11, like, right away. And I'm really only on step one, you know. And it was, that was where I learned to pray. That is when I learned that I did not have a relationship with a higher power. And that is how I learned how to have a relationship with a higher power. And I read 86 to 88 every day for 4 years. Like, it guided me. Like, every day, I needed that. And over time, I was just talking earlier before coming here, a friend was, you know, she was struggling with prayer. And I said, you know, the beautiful thing about it, it's like experiential. When I start out my day with, it could be just a short little, hi, God, thank you, I'm ready to face my day, guide me. It could be that. My day's going to go better. And the only way I know that is because when I don't do that, I might not have a bad day, but I might have an off day, like a judgmental day, a day where I'm not connected, like people get under my skin, you know. That's how I usually know I'm not connected. I start looking at people going, oh, my God, what an ass, you know, or like I roll my eyes or, you know, like I just get that discontent, like, and I'm very judgmental, like that's the big one. And that's my red flag now, like when I, you know, like I've got to jump back in. And so I have a lot of different practices that I do. I don't stick to the same thing anymore, but I do make sure that every day I have some kind of contact with God, because that is who I, that's my connection to you and the world, you know. That's how I survive. Like I talk to God now pretty much all day. Like, you got me here, you know, this person, like, sometimes they make me a little crazy or whatever and give me the right words. I do a lot of short little prayers, you know, show me the truth, give me clarity, give me the words, or just guide me, or, you know, are you with me here? Because then I'm just like, I just have a better handle and can function better in life, you know. So I've developed and I slip, you know, I mean, and the way I know is I get irritable and things get under my skin. One day the dogs were getting under my skin and I thought, well, girl, like, when the dogs are starting to bother you, you got a problem, you know. I mean, they are just not those kind of like creatures, like humans that talk back, you know, like they're just sweet and waggy. And, so then I do like a, you know, scan of my program. So when I first came in, it was like those five basic requirements. What do? You go to meetings, you have a home group, you do service work, you're transparent, you pray every day. I do those things. Like every day I am wrapped in AA in one way or another. Like it has become so woven in me now, like I can't go anywhere in the world where I don't bring this program with me. You know, it is just, I do it every day. I have a church that I'm affiliated with. It's a pretty liberal church. But I find that I just, like, I can't separate AA from my life. Like, they're one. Like, you can't do it. It can't be over here. I'm doing AA, and over here I'm an asshole, you know, like, or whatever. The principles come with us everywhere. You know, I just strive every day, like, one of my prayers, like, show me how to be the best, and then fill in the blank. You know, am I going to work the best employee, the best sponsor, the best mother, the best whatever, ex-wife. I don't have to do that one very often. But I do it if necessary, you know. It's just simple little things like that. You know, I'm just so grateful for this program and the ability to be able to stand up here. Like, I was so full of fear. Oh, my God, before I got sober, like, I was one of those that couldn't breathe if I was with people. Like, I just, like, paralyzed with fear. What do I do today? I before I get up here, I say a prayer. You know, God, just let me just help. Not even help. Just let me be authentic. Maybe reach somebody that may be struggling. Some, you know, just relate a little bit somewhere. You know, and I'll do that anytime I have to do any kind of public speaking. Let me be a good representative of AA. And I was taught that. My sponsor said, everywhere you go, be a good example of AA, even if people don't know. So, because she would say things like at the grocery store, like, if that person that you're a jerk to shows up at the AA meeting and you have just been a jerk to that person, it could happen. I've run into people in AA meetings that I've worked with or parents at the school that I worked at, that kind of thing. You know, we want to be good examples of AA kind of wherever we are, because you just never know. Like, and it could offer, you know, there's a lot of times that people, like, I'm pretty open with being in the program in my life. Like, I'd rather have people, like, I'm not real anonymous about my sobriety. It's amazing how people then will come get in touch and say, you know, my neighbor actually had two people this past week, and she's not an alcoholic, and she's like, whoa, what is this? And a couple of her friends were in crisis this week, and so she reached out to me, and I could, one of them I could reach out to, the other one's he's in lockdown, so I couldn't help him, but said when he comes out, if he says he wants help, I can hook him up with some guys in the program, you know. And this woman, I kept in touch with her, and she's hitting meetings again, and husbands about their wives about their husbands, you know, kids, mothers, like, what can I do, you know, to help? So I think it's, for me, and everybody's different with their, how anonymous they want to be. I'm one that just believes, like, you never know who's going to need you at some point, and people come out of the woodwork sometimes. You know, there's a lot of us out there, and a lot of us look kind of like me, you know, and I wasn't the most obvious alcoholic. In fact, I was just talking to, I have a sponsee that when she relapsed one time, she said, I don't even think you're an alcoholic. Like, you're just too nice. And, you know, I wasn't the meanest alcoholic in the bunch, but I could have a sharp tongue on me, but I was more of the happy-go-lucky one. You know, I kept a lot of the stuff to myself. You know, I wasn't the Jekyll and Hyde in that sense. I was in the Jekyll and Hyde in the sense that I drove drunk with my kids in the car. Like, that's, like, it is what it is, and I'm glad we're all okay, and I didn't kill anybody. But, you know, this side, like, there's such a definite mark in my life from 13 plus years ago, before AA and after AA, and I would never go back. Like, even if somebody said to me, well, you could have one or two drinks and drink normally, I wouldn't give this up, man. This is just too beautiful, this way of life that I have now. But I have to do this stuff every day. Like, I know I have to stay in, you know, the middle of the bed, as we say. Like, I've got to do my AA stuff on a regular basis. I am not immune from this disease. None of us are immune from this disease. And so I treat it daily. And I just appreciate y'all being here and listening to me, and that's my story.
Thank you so much, Barbara. I could totally relate to a lot of the Catholic school thing, for sure. Thank you.
First I slip, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescue me, and finally, waking there I see. takes me where the promises are real. Sometimes quickly, sometimes slow, we get just what we need. On a broad highway, stride for stride, we walk eternally. Look into love's window for a heart. Promises are real.